Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Tet, Amud Bet, the second line from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Rabbi, Eved shenasa et bat chorin bifnei rabo, yetzad acherut. An Eved Knani that marries a bat chorin in front of his master goes free. Amar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan, kol kach yesh biyadcha v'ani shoneh, says you have a member like that in your hand, meaning that that's a pretty big chiddush, because I have a memra that says, HaKotev Shtei Ruusim L'Shivchato, someone who writes a document of engagement, a lochic engagement, to his Shivcha Knanit, Rabbi Meir Omer Mikudeshet, Chachamim Omerim Eina Mikudeshet. Rabbi Meir says he is married, the Chachamim say he's not married. So here you have a machloket as to whether this type of thing works or not. Whereas you're bringing me a statement that if he marries him off to a bat chorin, he goes free, and we're certain about that. Now, with regards to this, an eved who marries a bat chorin is an isur. So now, the assumption of the Gemara is that an eved that marries a bat chorin, the only way his master would allow him to marry the bat chorin is if he really was freed. And so our assumption is that the master, looking on, allowing this to happen, must have freed his slave. And that's why he's marrying this bat chorin, and that's why we say that he is free. Yatzad cherut. He must be a free man. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan has a memra that suggests that if the master himself engages a shivcha knanit, which is just the same isur in reverse, here it's the man, the master who's the Israel, and then the shivcha knanit, and we say over there it's machloket Rabbi Meir and the chachamim, whether we assume that he's freed the shivcha knanit in order to marry her without isur. The case here is a case where his master put on the tefillin to him. That's a case we'll see in 1 second. The Gemara says, parallel to that, over here, that the case where the Eved marries the Bat Chorin, it's not just where he shows up with the Bat Chorin and says, oh, I'm getting married to her. Rather, it's a shidduch that the master made for his Eved Knani. The fact that he made the shidduch with the bat chorin implies that he clearly must have freed the eved knani, or that he made him into a ben chorin, because otherwise, why is he providing him with a wife who is a bat chorin? He doesn't want to have this eved perform an isur, as Rashi says, de'il lalav shacharei lo'emi aved isur al yado. If he didn't free him, he wouldn't have this eved be doing an isur because of him. Why would he allow that to happen? It must be that he's freeing the slave. The Gemara says, "Umi ika mide del avde lo me'avid le isura ve'iu avid isura." Well, then, how do you explain the discrepancy between when the eved is doing this versus when he's doing it? We have the statement that when the eved marries the bat chorin, then for sure he let the eved go free. So in that case, he wouldn't allow the eved to do a bi'isura, and when he makes the shidduch with the bat chorin, he clearly must have freed the slave. Yet when it comes to himself, the Rachamim say, Eina Mikudeshet, that when he's marrying a Shivcha Knanit, we assume that he's doing it B'Isur. Because otherwise, why wouldn't he be married to this Shivcha Knanit? We'll assume the same thing. He freed the Shivcha Knanit. She's a Bat Chorin, and he married her properly. So why is he unwilling to entertain an Isur with regards to his Eved Knani, but with regards to himself, he's totally fine violating that Isur, and we don't assume that the Shivcha Knanit was released. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Kocha Ba'eskinon, Darmala tzibo vidkajibo, that he uses the shtar erusin to both release her and to engage her halachically. And so the question is a little more complex here. It's not a question simply if he is releasing her. Of course he's going to release her if he's going to marry her, because otherwise he can't marry her beheter. She's a shivcha knanit. The only way he can marry her is if he frees her. But the method by which he frees her is the problem. So if he says, just get married with this document, then we for sure assume, Rashi says, that he freed her before that point. So if he simply comes to get engaged to her, we assume that he must have freed her, otherwise he wouldn't just come and engage her. But over here he states specifically that I want you to be freed with this document, and this will both be your shtar shichrur and your shtar erusim, all in one. Rabbi Meir Savar, yesh b'lezon hazeh lashon shichrur, that language suffices for Lashon Shichrur, which is Hariat Mikudeshet Li, is also a Lashon Shichrur, because you can only marry her if she is a Bat Chorin. So embedded or implied in the language of Hariat Mikudeshet Li is that he is freeing her. Rabbanan Zavre, ein b'lashon hazeh, l'shon shichrur. That's not your standard language of shichrur. And therefore, it doesn't work. And she remains a shifkla kananit because he did not explicitly free her. Again, if he marries her, similar to when he makes the shidduch for the Eved, over there we say that he for sure freed the Eved, otherwise he wouldn't make the shidduch with the Bat Chorin. Same with himself. If he's marrying a shifkla kananit, he for sure freed her beforehand. But over here where he specifically states that she's going free with the Shtar Erusin, then it's clear that he did not free her before. And this is the method that he's trying to free her with. Now, if that works, that's Rabbi Meir's opinion, then great. And he can marry her, it's not a problem. According to the Chachamim, she's not freed, and he can't marry her. He can't have Erusin with her. So everything fails, according to the Chachamim, because he didn't free her. What's interesting is that Rashi assumes here that all of this assumes that he preemptively freed the slave. The Tosafot read over here says, "V'kofin oto lichtov lo get shichrur," that we force him to write a get shichrur for the Eved. Now, whether that means that the Tosafot read says after the fact, we just want evidence of the fact that he freed him, so we force him to write a get shichrur, or whether the Tosafot read uses slightly differently than Rashi. Rashi says when we take an action like that, we assume that he freed her, or by the Eved, he freed him in order to marry this Bat Chorin. Or do we say, like the Tosafot read, that either he did free her, or if he didn't free her, allowing this activity to take place, he should have freed her, or him, and the fact that he didn't, we're going to force him now to get a get shichrur in order to get rid of these surim in these instances. Now, the statement that we quoted in the Gemara said, oh, just like when his master put tefillin on him, so too, this is the case here, where he married him off to a bat chorin. So now it's Amrei Bishu ben Levi, Eved she'niach tefillin b'fnei rabo, yatzah l'cheirut. That an Eved who puts on tefillin in front of his master, he goes free. Meitave, is that really true? Lavahe menu rabo. Osha sarabo apotropus. Osha niach tefillin b'fnei rabo. Osha karash l'osha psukim b'veit ha'knesset b'fnei rabo. Harei zeh lo yatzah l'cheirut. So over here you have a number of items in which the Eved engages. And the Eved engaging in these activities seemingly would only be true, or would only be allowed if he was a free person, or if he had a certain amount of standing. Here, the master borrows money from his slave. Borrowing money from a slave indicates that the slave has possession, has ownership, has assets for which to lend to the master, versus our general principle is mashakana eved kana rabo. And so the fact that he's borrowing from his eved is almost indicative of the fact that he must be a free eved. Or his master made him into an apitropos. He trusts him to be the executor, whether it's in his estate or whether it's in another area. It's a position that the Gemara says in other places of authority, and that if Beit Din appoints a person as an apitropos, there is a certain standing to that individual, that people trust them, and that they're considered to be plichim of the Beit Din. And that's an important position that you wouldn't assume that an Eved had. Oshe niach tefillin b'fnei rabo. Or he puts on tefillin in front of his Rebbe. Here, another thing that would indicate seemingly that he's a free person. Oh, shekarash l'shav sukim v'ed knesset, he got an aliyah in shul. In fact, they got an aliyah in shuls are also indicative of a certain manner of stature. So all of these that happened before his master, there it says, harei zeh lo yatzah l'cheirut. He's not freed. So how come over here you're telling me that when he puts on tefillin, he's free? We have a Tanaic work that says just the opposite. So Amar Rabba Bar Shila, kishrabo, hiniach lo tefillin. That's the answer, is when his master puts on the tefillin for him. So now, what's interesting here is the act of putting on the tefillin involves two aspects. One aspect is making the bracha on the tefillin. The other aspect is putting on the tefillin itself. Tosafot over here is sholel the possibility that the fact that he makes a bracha on the tefillin is indicative of the fact that he is free. Now that goes to a fundamental machloket about making brachot on mitzvot that you're not obligated in. Mitzvah to say shazman grama, which women are p'turot from, if they opt into doing the mitzvah, can they make a bracha on that mitzvah? Rova Rishonim believe that they cannot make a bracha, and that is the halacha for Svaradim, that they do not make a bracha, the women do not make a bracha when they engage in a mitzvah which they are p'turot from. On the other hand, the Ashkenazim, following the psak of the Rabbeinu Tam, Tosafot and other places in Shas, Rosh Hashanah Lam Gimel, there are other places where Tosafot discusses this in depth. The Rabbeinu Tam is of the belief that if you opt into a mitzvah, which you are not chayavin, you can still make the bracha. And for that reason, the Bnei Ashkenaz, the women who are Ashkenazim, do make a bracha. For instance, when they sit in the sukkah, or when they take a lulav, they do make a bracha. So Tosafot l'shitato, meaning the Rabbeinu Tam's shita, says the fact that the Eved makes a bracha here on the tefillin is not indicative of anything. Because an Eved could make a bracha, he is chayav mitzvot like a woman. So technically, he's patur from mitzvot, that are mitzvot aseh shazman grama, including tefillin. Tefillin is a mitzvot aseh shazman grama. Rashi writes, because Laila loves man tefillin. The Tosafot Reed writes, Shabbat loves man tefillin. But it's a mitzvot aseh shazman grama. So you would think if he opts into the mitzvah, makes a bracha, that's indicative that he's chayav. So he'd only be chayav if he was a free man, not if he was a slave. Tosafot says, no raya. Because women can opt into the bracha as well. And therefore you have no proof from the bracha. But he says that the act of putting on the tefillin, they ain't avadim regilim b'tefillin. That is not a normal thing that avadim engage in. It's not a mitzvah that they normally engage in. And therefore if he puts on tefillin, that's indicative of the fact, just the mere placement of the tefillin, wearing of the tefillin, is indicative of him being a free man, because that's not the practice of the avadim. And therefore, if his master puts the tefillin on him, then he goes free, because that's indicative. It must be that he's a free person, or it must be that his master freed him. Otherwise, why is he putting on tefillin on his eved? The way Rashi reads it is that the act of putting on the tefillin is indicative that he must have freed him beforehand, because we don't put tefillin on an eved. Again, the eved wearing tefillin is not enough. It has to be that his master is putting on the tefillin, which is indicative that his master is a party to him putting on the tefillin. And him being a party to it is indicative of the fact that he freed him. Again, the Tosafot Reed says you have to kofinoto l'shachreroto. Seems like he freed him, but we force him to give a get shechrur. Whether that's like Rashi, that we assume he already did it, but we force him to give a get shechrur. That whether it means that this type of action is indicative of the fact that he must want to free him or he should free him. Because once an Eved has already taken up the activities of a free person, we don't resubjugate him. And that's why we force him to give a get shechur. That could be the way that Tosafot Reed's reading it. It's not clear, but seemingly a little different than what Rashi is saying. Ki'at Rav Dima Rav Yochanan. Mi she'amar b'shat mitato, plonit shifchati, ayishtabduba la'achar moti. So that if he says on his deathbed, he's laying there and he says, so-and-so, my shifcha knanit, I do not want you to enslave her after my death. Kofina to Yorshin, we compel the Yorshim, the Kotvin la get shichrur, and they must write a get shichrur. Amru lefanav, Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi. Rabbi, yata mode shebane avadim. Why would you compel the Yorshim to free her? Don't you agree that even though she cannot be enslaved, her status as a shifcha knanit has value to the Yorshim, and the fact that her children that she has belong to the masters. Remember, if you treat the Eved Kanani, the Shifcha Kananit, as being property, then the children born to an Eved Kanani and a Shifcha Kananit are also property of the master, property of the owner. And that means here that if the master freed her from enslavement, in the sense that she may not be enslaved or work as a slave anymore, he still did not remove the Isur of Eved Kanani, which we discussed before. That isur, that shame of an Eved Kanani or Shifcha Kanani remains in place. If they are then bearing children, those children belong to the Adon. So the Yorshim have value in her remaining a Shifcha Kanani, even if she's not enslaved. So why are we saying that we compel them to free her when it's not in their best interest to free her? And there's a value in keeping her as a Shifcha Kanani. The distinction, as a thematically seen throughout the Gemara here, is that there's a monetary ownership, and then there's an ownership of Isur. The monetary ownership can be released through Hefker, through Yeush, or here, through a declaration, do not be Mishabed. On the other hand, the Isur can only be removed through a Get Shechrur, or if you do it through Kesef, meaning that if the whole thing is done through Kesef, if you purchase the freedom through both the monetary and the Isur side together, as Tosafot said yesterday, then you can accomplish the freedom of both of them through the acquisition, or if the Eved buys their own freedom. So here, again, we're seeing the same thing, which is you're separating between the monetary ownership, the enslavement, and the shichrur, which relates to the isur. And here we're going to compel them to free them. Doesn't seem right, because they have value in keeping her as a shifcha kenanit. What's interesting here is that this case is different than the case we had yesterday. At the end of yesterday's daf, we also had a case like this, where an individual wanted to free his shifcha on his deathbed, and he threw her the hat and says, acquire the hat and yourself simultaneously. Over there, first of all, we said it didn't work, and then we didn't compel him to give a get shechrur. Over here, we say it works because of the mechanism that he used. Over there, he's trying to use a kinyan chalipin. and he did the Kinyan Chalipin wrong, and that's why it fails. Over here, he's giving a tzava'a. He's commanding them on his deathbed to not enslave her. In that case, it becomes a tzava'at shchimera, that is giving a last will and testament, and that is binding on the Yorshim. So her not being enslaved here, even though there's no Kinyan, nevertheless it works because he gave it as a tzava'at shchimera, or mitzvah l'kayim divrei amet. But either way, he's using that mechanism, which he can, to free her, and that works. As opposed to yesterday, where he tried to use the Kinyan Chalipin and did it wrong, then we don't have either of those. We don't have the Kinyan, because that didn't work, and he doesn't have a tzava'ah, because he didn't tell him to do that. He simply tried to do it himself. Here he makes it clear what his intent or what his will is, and therefore we carry it out, that she's not enslaved. And as far as the freedom, that is what we're discussing here, that seemingly she requires to get shechrur. The statement from Rav Dimi is that we compel them to give the get shechrur. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yassi see that as being incorrect. Ki'ata Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda amar Rabbi Yochanan. Here we have a different version of Rabbi Yochanan's position. Misha amar b'shat mitato plonit shifchati korat ruach astali. So he says about his shifchananit, she was good to me my whole life. Yasela korat ruach. He should do something good for her. Kofim et yorshim vosim la korat ruach. Then we compel the Yoshim to do something good for her, to give her a korat ruach. And what is a korat ruach? Well, you have to ask her what a korat ruach is. Rashi says over here, ve'im rucha nitkara v'lo shichrur yishrach ruach. That they have to carry out the mitzvah l'kayim divrei amet, or a tzavat shichimera. And so the Yoshim, in order to placate her or make her happy, they have to figure out what makes her happy. If she's not happy until she's free, they have to free her in order to carry out the command of their father. My taima, mitzvah l'kayim divrei amet, because they should do or carry out the words of the mate to do a korat ruach for her. So Rashi notes over here, it's subjective. I mean, it's up to the shifcha when she's reached a point where she has korat ruach. But if that takes it till she's freed, then they have to do that because they have to listen to whatever the master, the father, said before he passed away. And since it's a mitzvah l'kayim divrei amet, that's why they are compelled to free her. This is not like the previous case where the father released her from the bondage or the monetary aspects, but did not take care of the Easter aspect. Over here, he takes care of everything. He says, give her a korat ruach, whatever that is. If that includes freeing her and getting a get shechur, that's included in his tzava, and therefore they have to do mitzvah l'kayim divrei amet. So, amar meimar, amafkir abdo, oto eved, ein lo takana. So this goes back to a meimar's statements before. We're going to have two statements of a meimar. One is, a person who's mafkir is eved, ain lo takana. There's no way to fix him, because he's released him from the monetary side. On the other hand, the iser side remains in place. And that's what the Gemara says, my taima, gufe lo kanile. The master no longer has ownership over the eved. Isurahu deika gabe. On the other hand, the iser remains in place. I mean, his status as an eved knani remains in place, because there was never any get shichrur here. So he remains under the auspices of his master, the Gabei Get Shechrur. Bisura lo matzi maknile. And Isura is not a tangible item that he can grant ownership to the Eved for. So here he's stuck in a bind, which is that this Eved's left in this limbo state where he cannot be enslaved because monetarily he's been released. On the other hand, he can't be freed from being an Eved Kenani because the vehicle by which we do that is lost over here. The way a Meimar believes is that if you take off the Easter at the time that you take off the Mamon, you have enough ownership to release him. But once you've given up the ownership of the Eved and all that remains is the Easter, you don't have sufficient rights to release him from the Easter. And on the other hand, it's not a tangible item that you can actually pass to him who has the rights to himself. And so therefore he's stuck in this limbo state, ein lo takana. As we mentioned yesterday, Rashi believes, it's on the top of the Amud Bet yesterday, Rashi says that when ein lo takana means he can't marry a shifcha kananit, and he can't marry a bat chorin. Can't marry a bat chorin because he's still an eved kanani. Can't marry a shifcha kananit because he's partially free. And so Rashi says he's really, literally left in limbo. But Rashi says he's not sufficiently an eved kanani. He's partially freed, and therefore he's not mutar b'shifcha kananit. Tosafot over here, I mentioned it yesterday, argues on Rashi and says that he's asur b'bat chorin, but he is mutar b'shifcha. He's still an Eved Kenani. An Eved Kenani can marry a shifcha. And one of his rayot is the Gemara in Yevamot that says that a person that's a chetzi Eved, chetzi ben chorin, we compel the master to release him because otherwise he's stuck. Or he can't be Mikayim Piria Virivia. Over here, you're going to put the Eved in the same predicament, which is he won't be able to be Mikayim Piria Virivia, because he won't be able to marry a Bat Chorin, he won't be able to marry a Shivcha Kananit. You could differentiate the cases, because in that case, in Yevamot, the master has the ability to free him, so we compel him to free him. Over here, he doesn't have the ability to free him. You can't compel him to free him. So here we have Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, exactly what it means, the status of limbo for in lo takana. Amar Rav Ashi da Meimar, va'amar ulo amar Rav Yochanan, v'Rav Chir ba'aven amar Rav, echad ze yatsa lecherut, v'tzarich get shichror. That's what we saw in yesterday's daf, that they believe both Rav Yochanan yesterday, and Rav, we had the memra on Lamed Chet, and when Rabbi Yochanan heard the memra from Rav, he says, Rav says like me? And what does that mean, Rav says like me? That if you release them, mafkir the Eved, then you've released the monetary ownership, then you, if you want to free them from the Yisur of Eved Kanani, you have to give them a Get Shichrur. But it's clear that both Rabbi Yochanan and Rav believe that the Get Shichrur works even after you've released the monetary ownership from the slave. So, Amemar, what are you saying? Amalei, Tzarich, Vein Lo Takana. You misread Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav and Rabbi Yochanan both say that, yeah, you do need a Get Shichrur, but you can't do it. So he says, I believe that what they meant when you Tzarich Get Shichrur is he needs a Get Shichrur, but there's no way to exercise that, and therefore he's stuck in this limbo state, Ein Lo Takana. On the other hand, you're reading it as being Tzarich, that you give it to him and it works. And that's not the case. Ikeda Amrei, there's another version of a Meimar statement. Amrei Meimar, Mafkir Avdo Umeit. This is the one that we quoted back on yesterday's daf. And this is where we had a problem, that it was a kasha, that a Meimar statement caused a problem for us, which is, a Mafkir Avdo Umeit. Someone who releases his ownership from the Eved, meaning the monetary ownership. So now what's left is the Isur. And then dies, Oto Eved in Lo Takana. That Eved has no takana. We quoted Rashi yesterday. Here the Gemara says it. My taima, gufe lo kanile. He has no ownership over the guf of the Eved, meaning his monetary ownership is gone. Isuru de ike gabe. The isur remains in place of Eved Kanani. Visura de bre lo morit. And he can't pass be Yerusha, the isur, to his children. As Rashi said yesterday, it's an intangible object. And v'chimayit ein ze Yerushalo rish lebanav. He can't pass an intangible item to his son. It's simply a right. It's not something where he has monetary ownership. If he has monetary ownership in the Eved, he can pass that to his children, to his Yorshim. On the other hand, if he simply has a right to his Eved, what's the right here? The right to free him. The right to give him a get shichur, the right to maintain his status as being an Eved Kanani. That right he cannot pass to his Yorshim. That's why the Eved is left in this limbo state. Because the Meimar says there is no way to free him at this point. The monetary aspect is gone. That was happened with the Hefker. The Mita Tadon ruins the one person who could have freed him and given the Get Shichrur. Ah, he has Yorshim. He can't pass the intangible object to his Yorshim. And yesterday's daf, we brought a Meimar as a question on the position that when the Adon is mate, that should automatically release him. That should be the equivalent of a Get Shichrur when the Adon passes away. Or the Chachamim here who argue in a Meimar say that you can pass a right, which is that whatever rights you have, you can pass to your children or your Yorshim, just like you pass tangible objects to your Yorshim. Any right you can also pass down like a Yipui Koach, like a power of attorney, which grants a person your rights. So that's what happens with your Yorshim. They pick up whatever rights you had, they pick up over here. And just like you had the right to free him, so too the Yorshim have the right to free him. Amalei Rav Ashi da Meimar, va kiata Rav Dimi am Rav Yochanan. That was the first memra that we quoted over here. Kiata Rav Dimi am Rav Yochanan. Misha mar bishat mitato plonit shifkati aishta buba. Do not enslave her anymore. Means that means he granted her monetary release, but he didn't give her a get shichrur. And then we compel the Yorshim to give her a get shichrur. What does that show you? That the Yorshim have the right to free her. He says the Rav Dimi ta'utahi. He says Rav Dimi's statement was a mistake. How does he know that Rav Dimi's statement was a mistake, a Meimar? Because Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi said it was wrong. Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi said, what are you talking about? Why are you compelling the Yorshim to free her? They have a value in keeping her as a Shifcha Knanit. My ta'uta. What's the mistake here? Delo amra b'lashon shichrur. The only mistake there is that he didn't grant her freedom through a lashon of shichrur. Ha'am rabbi lashon shichrur achanami. Had he granted her freedom through a lashon shichrur, it would have worked. See that if the Adon does it b'lashon shichrur, we would compel the Yorshim to free the Shivcha Kananit. So amalei, ana kederav Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda svirle. I hold like Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel was the second memra that we brought from Rabbi Yochanan. Misha Amar Bishat Mitato Plonit Shivchati Korat Ruach Astali Yasela Korat Ruach. Then Kofim Et Yoshim Osim La Korat Ruach. So therefore, I hold like that version of the memra from Rabbi Yochanan, not Rav Dimi's version of the memra from Rabbi Yochanan. And in that case, we say that Rabbi Yochanan never said this. And if Rabbi Yochanan never said it, then Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi never said what they said to counter what Rabbi Yochanan said. If they never said what countered it, then you can't make the diuk that you're saying over here. That Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi were upset about the fact that the Yoshim are being compelled to free her when their vested interest is to keep her, and the mate never gave a tzava to release her. So now, based on that, you don't have the diuk that you're making that says that had he said it correctly, we would have compelled the Yoshim to release her. So now, if all of that's missing, then you don't have any proof against me. And I hold, like Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Rabbi Yochanan, who says that Rabbi Yochanan never said anything of the sort of what Rav Dimi said, but it was a totally different case. It was a case where he says, I want you to give my shivcha a korat ruach. Now, korat ruach is something that is unclear, but there he's morish to his children, the shivcha chananit, intact. The monetary ownership and the isur are still intact. So when the children inherit it, they literally inherit the property of the Shivcha Kananit, and then they have to deal with the mitzvah, the Kayim Divrei Amet. But based on that, that's then Amemar says, is not in opposition to me. Now why it's very important for Amemar to be in line with Rabbi Yochanan is that Amemar is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, the Gemara does not want to have Amemar in conflict with Rabbi Yochanan, because why would he be in conflict with his Rebbe? So here, what the discussion going on between them is, well, Rav Dimi says this is what Rabbi Yochanan says. In the end, what Amemar says is Rabbi Yochanan never said that. Yeah, Rav Dimi is wrong. Meaning that Rabbi Ami Yassi challenged the statement of Rav Dimi because they thought Rav Dimi was right. But if Rav Dimi is totally incorrect, their criticism and the deal you're making out of their criticism is meaningless because none of this ever took place or should have taken place. So I'm like Rav Yehuda. I believe in the memra that came from Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, which has no proof against me. Because there it shows a full-fledged Shivcha Ketanit being passed to the Yoshim. And has no indication about what I'm speaking about. The Gemara yesterday said that our conclusion about the statements of Rabbi Yochanan, Hamafkir Avdo Yetzalei Cheirut V'Tzarech Get Shichrur, and then we brought the case of the Ger, the way that Rav Nachman resolved that stira, we said was a kasha from a Meimar. And therefore a Meimar's statement is not so straightforward, because even back there we have a problem, other statements from Rabbi Yochanan that seem to counter a Meimar's position. Right, so now the Gemara says, How discarto de Avde? There was this city or of Avadim. It was a city which had a bunch of Eved Knanim that were there. These Daban the Oved Kochavim. They were sold to a non-Jew. In terms of the scenario here, a Jewish owner of Avadim Knanim, whether it's multiple owners or a single owner, sold them, because he has the right to sell them, to an Oved Kochavim, which technically he can do. But he does not have the right to do. We're going to see that later on in the Masechta. Oved Kochavim has a right to the Masei Yadayim of the Eved Kenani. He can't sell the Guf to him, but he can sell his Masei Yadayim to him. But there is an imposition, midrabanan, a knas, that he sells an Eved Kenani to Oved Kochavim, that he goes free. Because he's mafkia him min mitzvot. And Eved Kenani, while he's under the Jewish ownership, had a partial conversion, and now he's chayav in mitzvot, like an isha. If he sells him to the Oved Kochavim, he's no longer be able to perform the mitzvot. He's going to be in a position where he's now going to be subject to the rules of the Oved Kochavim. So the Chachamim penalized him that the Avadim go free. So now what happens here is, how discarded the Avde, this Daban Oved Kochavim, it's a city full of Avadim Kenanim that were sold to a non-Jew. Kalu Marvata Batrai. The ownership of the second one is gone. The Jew sold them to the Oved Kochavim, which he's not allowed to do. And Chachamim said there's a knas, they go free. So as far as the Oved Kochavim's ownership over here, we assume that his ownership is meaningless in this case, because of the way the knas is set up, is that he was unable to buy them, and the transaction fails, and they go free. So as far as their monetary ownership, their ownership of the Oved Kochavim is released, and that doesn't exist anymore. But, obviously what the issue is the original owner's ownership on the Isur still is intact, and they're not free men until they get a get shichrur from the original owner. So after the Kamei de Ravina, Amarlo zilahadru abnei marvata kamai. Go to the children of the original owners. V'yichtechu l'chu gita decheruta. And have them, the monetary ownership's been released because you sold them to the Obed Kuchavim, which you weren't allowed to do. And that released them from the monetary ownership. The Iser ownership is still there. So you need to get shechur to get out of that. Who has that right? It was the original owner. But the original owner has passed away. And what he's suggesting is go to the children of the original owner, which is against a Maimar's position. A Maimar says you can't be Morish, an intangible item. And so how is he going to the children of the original owners to get Shechrur over here? So I'm like, Rabban on the Ravina, that's exactly what the Rabban said to Reviver, but Amar a Maimar, Mafkir of Dova mate, Oto Evid in Lo Takana. A Maimar's statement says that this doesn't work. You cannot be Morish that right to your children. And therefore, he's stuck in limbo, and you can't do anything for them. Amalu ana Rav Dimi spherely. He says, I hold like Rav Dimi. Remember, Amemar said that I hold like Rav Shmur by Yehuda. And now, what does he say back to him? I hold like Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi's statement that brought Rav Yochanan. Amalu Rav Dimi ta'utahi. Everybody agrees that Rav Dimi's statement, or the memory that he brought from Yochanan, is incorrect. So Amalu my ta'uta. Delo amra b'lashon shechrur. What was the mistake? That the Adon over there didn't say to free the Shifcha Kananit. He simply said that she should not be enslaved. Ha'amra b'lashon shechrur ha'chanami. But had he said it in a lashon shechrur, it would have worked. So what he does is, the question that Rav Ashi brought in a Maimar, Ravina basically learns the Gemara that way, which is that Rav Dimi brought a statement from Rav Yochanan, which we agree that there was a mistake there, there was something wrong over there. What was the failure? The failure was how he said it to this woman. He said it as a lashon of releasing the monetary side, not something that said to release her completely. And therefore, the Yorshim are under no obligation to release her. But you can infer from that is, if he did say it properly, the Yorshim would be obligated to release her. And therefore, it's not a question on me, or on the other hand, a Maimar's wrong. Because then you could be Midayek, that you could have the Yorshim release the Shivcha Kananit, even after her monetary ownership is been released, you can have the Yorshim release her from her bondage in the terms of Isur. And therefore, Amemar is wrong. And the Gemara says, V'hilcha taki Ravina. The Locha is like Ravina over here, against that of Amemar, and therefore, Shigama Yoresh Yechol Shachrer, Afagav Delek Alei Ale Kinyin Isur Belachud. That's what Tosfot reads. That the Yorshim have a right, or can inherit the right of Shichrur, even though there's no monetary ownership over here, against that position of a Maimar. And again, it makes a lot of sense here, because a Maimar has bumped into too much friction with his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, in the statement here of Rav Dimi, also the statements of Rav Nachman, back on Lamed Tet, yesterday's daf. And so therefore, the Gemara here says that a Maimar's position is clearly not correct, because we see a lot of evidence to the contrary, that Yorshim do have an ability to inherit that right, and the Yorshim can free the slave, even if it's all that's left is just the Isur on the slave. How Avda de Beitre is an Eved that belongs to two owners. Kam chad minayu v'shacharei l'palgei. One of them gets up and frees half of him. Amar idach, so the other guy knows what's going to happen. That's the Mishnah in Yivamot. Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. What do you do for someone who's a chatzi Eved and chatzi ben Chorin? So at first, there was a machloket Beit Hillel ben Shammai. Mishnah Achrona says that Beit Hillel agreed to Beit Shammai. Kofin et Rabo, you compel his master, the second master, to release him so that he can be Mikayim. The mitzvah Priya Rivya, that's one of the main sugyas in Yivamot about Priya Rivya. Lo leto vera'a, l'shevet yitzara, God created the world to be populated, not to go empty. And therefore, there's an obligation to take care of this Eved, that he's not left in this state of limbo. So this guy is smart, he knows what's going to happen. Is that the authorities are going to come and compel him to release this Eved. And that's going to be his loss. So what does he do? He goes, Hashtash, mi abi rabbanon, umafsadule minai. The rabbanon are going to hear this, and I'm going to lose my ownership over this Eved because they're going to compel me to sell him. Now the truth is that they will force the Eved to give a shtar to pay for it, but whether he thinks he's not going to get the money or he wants his slave, either way, he's not happy with this situation. Azel aknie libno akatan. Yeah, I have a solution to the problem. I'm going to give him to my child who is a minor. Because a child who is a minor has the ability to acquire. But on the other hand, Beit Din will not compel a minor to act. Because compelling of someone to act is only when you think the person has a bar dat or they has the ability to make decisions. You can't compel a katan to do something against his will, because he doesn't have a will in a real sense, because he is a minor. So therefore, he knows that Beit Din can't go after the Katan. So he says, I'm going to get around this problem. I'm giving the Eved to my son, who's a Katan. Shachai Rav Yosef prayed the Rava, the Kamei, the Rav Papa. So Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, sends to Rav Papa, what should we do in this case with this guy? Shalach Le, Kasher Asa, Ken Yaselo. Like he did, we're going to do to him. Gmulo Yeshiv Lo Berosho. You'll give his due on his head, meaning that we're going to pay him back for what he did. Anan Kimlan Biyanoka Demikarva Dati Legabe Zuze. We know that children like money. Anytime you wave a couple of coins in front of a child, they'll do anything you want if you just wave a couple of coins in front of them. Mukminan Le Aputropis. Let's establish an apitropis, meaning a guardian for this individual, for this katan, to take care of his property, because his father now gave property to this minor. We'll appoint an executor for his estate, or a guardian for his estate, to take care of him monetarily. Umekarkesh le zuze, then wave a little money in front of the katan, v'katev le getet tichiruta al shemei, and then write a document of emancipation in his name. This is a very difficult sugya. There are a number of items here that are not clear, and some of which we already dealt with in yesterday's daf, some of which we're going to think about here. One of the first issues is, does a katan have a kinyan? Does a katan have the ability to acquire property? Tosafot said yesterday that a katan does not have the ability to acquire property. Midoraita. He says that later on in the Gemara, when we talk about the fact that he picks up an aveda, that's mishum darchei shalom. The Gemara in Sukkah that says that a katan who takes a lulav acquires the lulav, that he says is only the case where there's a dat makneh, that there's a person who's granting the ownership to him, then it works. But if a katan takes ownership from hefker, he cannot acquire something. And therefore, the Gemara that says hapi utot, which we're going to see later on, youngsters who transact, their transactions are considered to be transactions in order to give them the ability to survive and interact. So their transactions are good transactions. Is that the Rabbanon or is that the Oraita? So Tosafot says that when it comes to acquisition, it's the Oraita. When it comes to them granting ownership, it's only the Rabbanon. That's because whenever there's a dat makneh, there's another party granting them the ownership, it makes up for the deficit of their inability to acquire. Over here, the father was a granting party, and therefore, according to Tosafot, the katan ends up with ownership here, mi deoraita. On the other hand, if you look in the Tosafot read says, when it comes to ownership of a katan, he says, "Beperkan izakim ani atid ha'uchiach she'ein zechia lekatan mi deoraita klal." A katan has no zechia whatsoever ki imid rabbanan, only on a rabbinic level. And therefore, any matana that you give to him, midoraita, eino matana, is not a gift. And therefore, the ownership here is only midrabanan. That will make a big difference in our case. Tosafot views the katan's ownership here as being ownership deoraita. Even though the katan himself doesn't have an ability to be konet fully, if he takes something from hefker, he doesn't have a kinyan. But when someone is granting him that ownership, it works. So here, the katan has ownership over this slave midoraita, according to the Tosafot. According to the Tosafot Reed, the Katan only has ownership here in Mi Drabanan. Of course then, for the Tosafot Reed, the solution here is very easy. If he only has ownership in Mi Drabanan, the Rabbanan can intervene and do the opposite and say he doesn't own him anymore. They can do Hefker, Beit Din Hefker, and remove his ownership over here. Again, so for the Tosafot Reed, what happens here is very simple. He says, we'll do to him what he deserves. V'hai did Masuche the Katan l'ktov lo get al shmo. So the fact that he has to write a get shechur is just to remove the kinyan derabanan. Aval miu le'aviv, vaday hayu kofin lichtov lo shechuro. Shekinyan gamur hu v'lo nistalik me'alav. The father still has full ownership over this slave. Because midoraita, nothing transferred to the katan. That means the father has the monetary ownership and the isur ownership. And what the Tosafot Reed says is, you compel the father to give him a get shichrur. That you can do. Kofin otoad shemer rotzani. You take him to Beit Din and say, you did this, we'll make sure to take care of you. He wanted to prevent the slave from going free. In the end, he gets exactly what he deserves. The slave goes free. And we'll do it by taking away the tzad dirabonon of kinyan. You can either do that through hefker, Beit Din hefker. Or, wait, the Gemara says over here, it's just easier to get the katan to sign off and release him, because it's only a din derabanan, he owns him, so the same derabanan can allow him to release it. So you shake the money in front of him, get a shechur from the katan. But to get rid of the real problem here, you kofin rabo, you force the original owner, the father, to give a get shichur. That is the view of the Tosafot Reed. Again, his view is the easiest or the simplest because he thinks the Katan does not have any real rights over here or any real ownership. Rashi says over here, you have a problem because the Yanoka is a larbak fia. Here, as we mentioned before, Beit Din doesn't compel Katanim to do things. On the other hand, Tinok Zem, Mekho Mekach, Umemkaro Memkar Vemetaltalim. He's quoting the Gemara later on in Menizokim, which says that a Katan has the right to transact. It's a puotot. If they sell and they buy, those transactions are real. So Tosafot Reed says, that's only midrabanan. Rashi clearly believes that that's on a doraita level. Their transactions are good transactions. That means over here, he acquired this eved, mi doraita. He owns the eved now. So what are we going to do? We have to get a get to cheruta al shmei. We need to get a get shichur. Rashi believes that the get shichur is coming from the katan. That we get the katan to sign a get shichur using the apitropos as his representative, but we get the katan to sign on the get shichur and to grant the get shichur. How do we do that? We shake money in front of him and convince him that that's what he wants to do. And now the apitropos doesn't block that or doesn't stop that because he's working on behalf of Beit Din. As Rashi notes over here, apitropos mukmini layin betakanato. You appoint an apitropos to be his guardian. This is not in the best interest of the Katan to free the slave over here. He's better off keeping the slave than freeing him. How could then the apitropos agree to do something like this? So Rashi says the appointment of the apitropos is not to prevent the sale or make the sale. The only job of the apitropos is to make sure that the Katan gets fair value, that he gets what he deserves. I mean that it's not about whether they do or don't sell the slave. It's simply that if they do sell the slave, that he gets full compensation for selling the slave. So the apitropos' job as the guardian is just to make sure that he gets full value. We convince the gay katan to free him because of the money that we shake in front of him. But in the end, the apitropos' job is to make sure that either the slave here writes an IOU to the katan for his value, or whatever you have to do in order to make the katan whole over here in terms of the monetary side. But as far as the get shichur, Rashi says it comes from the katan. Tosafot says, V'lo nehira l'rabbeinu Shmuel. The Rashbam does not like what Rashi says over here, because perish the kunches to afresh al shmei the katan. Sheim asay katan klum lahatiro b'vat churin. The Rashbam has a problem, which is maybe you can argue that a katan has zchiyah, that a katan in transactions has a zchiyah midoraita. What you cannot argue is that a katan's action, the gabe get shichrur, has any meaning. How can he be mishachrer and eved when the dot of a katan and the actions of a katan are meaningless? So he says, the fact that a katan signs on a get shichrur over here has no bearing on this eved. Does nothing for him. And therefore, he says that he can't agree with Rashi. And what he says is, afagav de pukutot kabar shitu kabar sheva mekaram mekar b'metautalim. He quotes Rashi's thing that they have zchiyah, they have the ability to transact. Hainu b'mamon dafka. That's in monetary matters. De hefker beit din avi hefker. So he says, similar to the Reed, that this is an institution, derabanan, that allows him to transact, and Beit Din gets involved. But Beit Din only can do hefker, Beit Din, hefker, when it comes to monetary matters, not bezad isur. So that means maybe they can get the slave out of his possession monetarily, but they can't get the isur released from him. Ela nirlo lafarish dechavle gital shmei de apitropus. The guardian writes the get shichrur over here. Va'afagav de ba'alma eno apitropsin reshaim lotzi an the cherut. In general, guardians are not empowered to free slaves. They can't act on behalf of the Katan to free a slave. That's what Rashi said. The Rashi got out of that problem and says we have the Katan do the get shichur, and the apitropos be a guardian to ensure he gets full value. But over here, if you believe that a Katan's actions is nothing, so now who's granting the shichur? The apitropos. Tosafot says that in general, a guardian is not granted that power. Hacha kemen da'asa shelo kehogen. So here he says something interesting. He says that because this guy acted inappropriately, the Beit Din granted the guardian the rights here that otherwise belonged to the Katan. Now that's not as simple as it seems, because how do you get the rights over to the apitropos? Because you can move mamon, you can't necessarily move isur. What you have to say is that the monetary movement over here, since it's done fully, I mean, it's as if he sold the slave to his son. In that case, you're moving the mamon and the iser together. And therefore, like it moved to the katan together, it also moves to the apitropos together. At the right level, the apitropos is now empowered to free the slave. And when he frees the slave, we allow him to do it, even though normally he's not empowered to do that, because this guy did something wrong by giving it over to his son, the Katan. According to the Bali Tosafot over here, the Epitropos, who has dat, is the one who frees him in the end. He's the one who can give him the shechur. How do we get the ownership over to that Epitropos, according to the Rashbam? By Hefker Beit Din Hefker. That's how we get the ownership over to the Epitropos. Now, why do you need to shake money in front of the Katan here? In this instance, the way that Tosafot, the Rashbam is explaining it, the Katan has no say on this. He's doing nothing here. It's the guardian that's doing everything. Tosafot says, "Lo kirkushe zuze, lo ratzu beit din hafkiro, liten apitropo l'shachro, deinachon avor al dato shel tinok." So the Gemara says that they didn't feel comfortable just taking away the ownership of the Katan, because Katanim don't understand or maybe don't really get the power of beit din. So they just wanted to make it smoother, look more reasonable, that they took it away from this Katan, so they have him basically sell, they ever give the rights over to the Epitropos, because we convince him with a little money that he will do that. So again, it's all a show, it's not for real, because the ownership to the Epitropos comes through Hefker Beit Din Hefker. We just want to convince the Katan that this is the right thing, so we give him a little bit of money to make him happy, and so that he doesn't object to everything that's going on. It's not a knas over here. What's interesting is the Rabbeinu Tam, or the way that his older brother, the Rashbam, is explaining that the whole thing here is a knas beit din, and they do hefker beit din hefker. The Rabbeinu Tam objects to that because of the language that the Gemara uses over here. The way that the Gemara expresses a knas. He did something wrong, therefore we'll do something wrong to him. What's something wrong? We're going to exercise our rights of eminent domain as the beit din and disown him from his property. That is Hefker Beit Din Hefker. The Rabbeinu Tam says, look carefully over here. The Lashon is not that who asa shelo kehogen, therefore we will do shelo kehogen, but rather the language over here is kasher asa ken yaseh lo. The way that he did, we'll do to him. Not that it's a knas. And therefore he says, bedinu diachola apitropos l'shacharo derech mechira. That the way the apitropos can free the slave is not through a get shechror, but rather through sale. And that's what we mentioned before, that an Eved Kenani, if he is sold to himself, can earn his freedom through that sale. Meaning that at the same time that he pays or acquires himself, whether even if that's done through a loan or an IOU, he also gains his freedom. And therefore, through purchase or through kesef, an Eved Kenani can be both purchased, the monetary side, and freed from the shechrur side. And therefore, the Epitropos has the right to free this slave, not because he gives him a get shechrur, like the Rashbam suggests, but rather because he sells him. And that's what gains him is freedom. And therefore, what the Rabbeinu Tam says, you don't even need to shake the zuzeh in front of the Katan. The Epitropos is empowered as the guardian to sell the slave for the benefit of the Katan. Only job of the guardian is to ensure that he gets full value. So he can sell the slave, get full value for him, and that would be a perfect action on part of the guardian, and it will free the slave when he sells him. The Tinok is standing there screaming, I don't want to sell the slave, and we're selling him anyway from under him. Meaning that, why is he screaming and saying, I don't want to sell him? Because the father told the son what to say. The father came up with the scheme, and he tells the son, don't let them sell him, don't let him sell him. So the boy is saying, I don't want to sell him, I don't want to sell him. And Beit Din says to the Epitropos, go ahead and sell him. So how do we shut down the child? Kirkushe zuze. We have him shake money in front of the Katan to convince him that what his father is saying is not worthwhile, and it's better for you to sell the slave. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. And then, v'gita de cheruta nami lo avitzarich. He says, the get cherut he doesn't need either, because the kesef frees him. Selling the slave into freedom is a way to free him, and you don't need the get shechrur at all. So then, why do they do that? Since you're doing this against the father's will, we get a get shechrur from the father, seemingly over here, because we don't want him coming back and reasserting his rights as the owner of the slave. He'll come back and say, I own the slave, he's my slave, and come back to me. And the slave has no evidence to the contrary. All it says there is there was a sale to this other guy by a katan. Where is the shechrur over here? So we force him to give a get shechrur so that the owner cannot come and reassert his rights over the Eved Kenani. Again, that's all midrabanan. But from here, seemingly, according to Rabbeinu Tam, even like the sheet of the Tosafot before, that the kinyan of a katan is doraita, we don't have a problem over here because the Epitropos is empowered to act by Beit Din on behalf of the katan, and his selling of the Eved can also free the Eved. And so he doesn't need a get shechor. There's no Isser here to release. And therefore, through the sale, through a monetary transaction, he frees the slave, which is empowered to do by Beit Din. And that gives him his freedom. The get shechor and the karkei shezuzei is just to take away from the problems of people saying that, the Katan was saying, I don't want to sell him, and it looks like a fraud that we're selling him. Or the fact that the master might reassert his rights over here, so we force him to give a get shechor. So that's all midrabanan, just to make the picture look good. But otherwise, midoraita, he's freed through a sale. These are four different views of what is exactly going on here in the Gemara. We had the view of the Tosafot Rit, Rashi, the Rashbam, and now the Rabbeinu Tam, exactly what is transpiring here and what actually gains the freedom of this slave. And again, Tosafot Rit says it's because Kofin, his father, to give him a get shechur. Rashi says it's the get shechur of the Katan that frees him. The Rashbam says that it is Hefker Beit Din Hefker that frees him, and the Rabbeinu Tam says it's the sale of the Eved Kanani that actually gains him his freedom. Tarabanan. Homer Asiti Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin. He writes in Ishtar, I made my Eved a free man. Asui Ben Chorim, he is a free man. Harihu Ben Chorim, he is a free man. Harihu Ben Chorin. All of those languages work. Esenu Ben Chorin, if he writes in the Ishtar that he hands him, I will make him a free man. Rabbi Omer Kana, Rabbi says that the document that he's giving him simultaneously accomplishes that. Meaning that when he hands him a document that says, Hare Asenu Ben Chorin, he is, through that document, both saying, when I will free him, meaning in the future, is, with this document, I will free him. And that's when it's carried out. We assume, according to Rabbi, the Shechor happens with this Shtar, even though the language is of a future tense. We assume that that future tense is now being executed with the giving of the Shtar. Chamim say that he's not koneh, because the promise to free him in the future is simply that, a promise to free him in the future. So the Shtar says that in the future I'll give you another Shtar that will say that you are free. But unless he gives him that other Shtar, he's not free. Rabbi Yochanan, v'kulan b'shtar. All of this discussion here, which is the way that I explained it to you, is all with a Shtar. These are not oral conversations. As Rashi knows over here, aval b'amir ba'ama lovi ben chorim, v'lo paka memone mine. If he just says it orally, he can back out of it. Unless there's some form of formal kinyan, the fact that the master says the slave is free is meaningless unless there's a kinyan over here. Those kinyanim can take place in different ways. Kesef, shtar, or chalipin, as we saw Rashi and Tosafot said on yesterday's daf, that a kinyan chalipin can act in place of a kinyan kesef, and therefore the kinyan chalipin works. But without a kinyan here, there's no obligation on the master. Rashi over here brings another alternative to what it means, b'kulan b'shtar. V'ani shemati kulan b'shtar tzarech l'ktov get shechur. That they're compelled to write a get shechur. Rashi rejects that explanation for a number of reasons, one of which is the next Gemara. And he says that that explanation doesn't fit well into the next Gemara, which is Tarabanan. Homer, natati sadeh plonit l'ploni. I gave such and such a field to so-and-so. It is given to so-and-so. Harihu shalom, it's his. Harihi shalom. All of those are indications that he gave ownership to that individual. It's nena laploni, I will in the future give it to so-and-so. Rabbi Meir Omer kana, v'chomim omim lo kana. Okay, it's similar machloket that we had before between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Over here we have the same thing. Rifskir says that it's Rabbi here again. Omer kana. Chamim Ramim, lo kana. The Chamim say there's no kinyan. I'm Rabbi Yochanan again, v'kulan b'shtar. They're all with a shtar. So over here, it's very different. Rashi says, you can't say that when a person gives a gift, you can come along and then say, oh, kulan b'shtar, that after he does it orally, he makes a commitment that we're going to force him to give a shtar matana. You can't compel someone to give a shtar matana. It's one thing if he frees a slave, and you say orally, it works. And then we're going to compel him to give a get shechur. That you could say we can compel someone to give a get shechur so that the Eved has evidence of the fact that he's been freed and he doesn't reassert his ownership over him. By a matana, you can't compel someone to give a shtar as a matana. If he gave a gift, he gave an oral gift. That's it. So Rashi rejects that explanation and says over here, kulan b'shtar means that the shtar says in it that I gave so-and-so a field or so-and-so was freed. That's what's written in the shtar, and that's the meaning of Rabbi Yochanan's statement. Because, as Rashi says, oral statements are not binding unless they have a kinyan, a formal kinyan associated with them. And here you lack a kinyan when it's done orally, except if there's a shtar given, or if there's a kinyan chalipin or a kinyan kesef. So you need one of those items in order to have this be binding. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan says it's bishtar. Because the shtar becomes the binding kinyan over here in order to lock in the matana or to lock in the freedom of the slave. Tan Rabbanan. Omer asiti ploni avdi ben chorin. So the master says, I made my slave free. V'omer lo asani. The slave says, he never freed me. So now you have an argument between the master saying he did free him and the slave saying I was never freed. Chayshinan shema zika lo ayidei acher. There's a possibility that the master freed the slave without the slave knowing. And that is that someone, he could have said to someone else, make a kinyan on this on behalf of the slave that he should go free. Zokin sha adam shelo bifanav. It's a zchut for the slave to go free. And therefore, if the master granted this to a third party on behalf of the slave, meaning the ownership of himself to a third party, it works. So there is a possibility that unbeknownst to the slave that he was free. And as Tosfot says over here, chashinan, it's not like the normal case where you say chashash is that we worry about. Here he says chashinan, that's the way we paskin. We assume, the chashinan here means it's presumed to be true, is the chashinan over here. Not that maybe, but presumed to be true, and therefore the evidence is free. Katavti v'natati lo. On the other hand, if he says, I wrote and gave him a get shichur, v'omer lo katav li v'lo natan li, and the slave says, no, never happened. Hodat baldin kamei adim dami. There, we believe the Eved. What are you going to say? The Eved said, I wasn't free. So now the master says, I did free him. The master can't exert control over him because he said, I freed him. The Eved is not freed because he says, I was never freed. And that's exactly like the case in Kiddushin, where each party is bound by their statement because Hodat baldin kamei adim dami. And therefore, each party here is now bound by their statements. And so the Eved is not free, but the master doesn't have ownership over the other of it anymore. Omer, natati sade plonit leploni. V'omer lo natanli. Again, he says, I gifted this field to so-and-so, and the person says, I never received such a gift. Chayshinan shema zika lo ayidei acher. Again, we presume that the owner of the field did this to a third party, and therefore the gift was a real gift, but the recipient just didn't know that he got this windfall, and therefore we say it does belong to him. Katavti v'natati lo. Now that if he says, I granted him a matanah through a shtar and I handed the shtar to him, v'omer lo katav lo natanli. And the recipient says, I never got such a shtar. Hodat baldin kameya edim dami. Again there, each party is making a declaration and each party will be bound by the declaration. The recipient will not get the gift because he says that he never received it. The grantor of the gift actually probably will get the property back because if he says he granted it and it never went through or it never happened, then he'll take the property back. Mi ochel peirot. Who eats the peirot? Meaning now you have a field. It's one thing when the slave's in limbo. Now you have a field in limbo that is productive. That field that has production, what do you do with the production of that field? Does it belong to the recipient or to the grantor of the gift? The field's in limbo. Grantor says it's not mine, it's his. The one who's the recipient says it's not mine, it's his. So then what happens to the fruits? Rav Chisda Amar, notein ochel peirot. Chisda says that the grantor eats the peirot. Rabba Amar, mishalshin et peirot. You put it into escrow, and you wait till Eliyahu comes, and we figure out who it belongs to. Basically, it's left in escrow until we can determine who's the real owner here, which we won't be able to do until the time of Mashiach, and therefore it just stays in escrow. Below plige, they don't argue. Haba abba, haba bira. Depends on who was the recipient over here. It was the father, or if it was the son, was the recipient that we're speaking to. If it is the father who is the recipient over here, then the father knows with certainty whether he accepted the gift or he did not accept the gift. So therefore, when the father says, I did not receive the gift, we believe him, and we believe him so fully that it goes back to the grantor of the gift ownership. Why is that? Because when someone grants a gift, he doesn't know in the end whether the person accepted it. He has a right to reject the gift. Where an Eved Kanani is freed, he can be freed against his will, he doesn't have any choice in the matter. Over there, you can't speak about whether he accepted it, he didn't accept it. I mean, the question is, did he get the get shechur or did not get the shechur? But you can't say that he rejected the get shechur. It's not up to him to reject the get shechur. On the other hand, here by a field, the mikabel, the recipient, could reject the gift. So what might have happened over here is that the grantor gave the gift and he thinks that the recipient accepted it. The recipient says, I never got such a thing. That could mean that I never think you gave me the field, or it could be that maybe you did, but I didn't want it. I didn't accept the gift. So that's why it goes back to the notain in that case. On the other hand, where it's the son of the recipient saying, my father never received the gift, he can never make that statement with certainty. He's saying, my father never told me about such a gift. My father never told me about the receipt of that. But he can't make a definitive statement. And therefore, we don't know whether the recipient rejected it or whether maybe he didn't know about it and it came to him. And that's why it goes into escrow. That's the difference between whether the recipient party now who is in this case, whether he is a case where it's the father himself, the person who was the recipient speaking. Over there, we say it goes back to the notain. Or if it's the son of the recipient speaking, where there we say it goes into escrow, because we really don't know now which side is telling the truth, quote-unquote, which one is the notain or the mikabel. Now, Rashi claims that this might be independent of the previous case. It doesn't have to be exactly the previous case that we spoke about. This might be just an independent question about when you have these types of issues of grantor and recipient, what do you do? Others read it as a continuation of that previous case. Next Mishnah. Eved shaso rabo aputiki la'achirim v'shichrero. An Eved Kanani that is made as directed collateral for a loan. The owner takes out a loan, and as collateral for the loan, he gives his Eved Kanani. But he doesn't simply give him as collateral, he gives him as directed collateral, which means that this is the only thing that you will have the right to collect from, but it is available to you. And then he frees the slave. Shurat adin in Eved chayav klum. The Eved, mitzad adin, the Eved has no obligations over here. His master freed him. He wasn't obligated to pay the debt. He wasn't obligated to anybody over here. He should go free. Ela mipnei tikkun olam. Because of tikkun olam, that's why this Mishnah is found here. Kofin et rabo vasoto ben chorin. We compel his master to make him into a free person. V'kotev shtar al damav. And the Eved writes a shtar saying, I owe you my value. We'll have to discuss why that is. Or what is the scenario here? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Eino kotev ela mishachrer. What are you talking about? We don't make him say he owes the money. Why is he obligated to pay the money? He didn't take the loan out over here. He didn't steal anybody's money. Why should the Eved over here have to pay back anybody else's loans or offer his value back to his owner? So now, what's the case exactly? Machloket here. Eved shaso rabo putugi v'shichrero. Mi shichrero. Who freed the slave over here? Amarav rabo arishon. His first master freed him. Shurat adin, ena eved chayav klum the rabo sheni. And what does it mean that the eved is not obligated to the one? It's to the second master. Kederava. Because of the position of rabo, damarava. Hektesh, chameitz, v'shichror, mafkin midei shibud. All of these items can take away someone's encumberment over a property. So, for instance, if a person takes out a loan and makes his behemah, his animal, directed collateral for this loan. And then he goes ahead and he's maktish that animal, the mizbeach. Hekdesh then will remove the lien that this other individual has. It is able to overcome the other individual's lean on this property, and basically it wipes out any interest that anyone else has in this animal, and it's hekdesh. Rashi over here, the Shita Do and Shas, says that the hekdesh that works here to free you from a shibud is only hekdesh aguf, which is that only if you're makdish the animal, and it will end up on the mizbeach, that is mafkia midei shibud. It seemingly is an explicit gemara. Tosfot here quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, he never goes to the full length. The Rabbeinu Tam in other places in Shas says clearly that even hekdesh berakabayit is mafkia midei shibud. It has the ability to remove a shibud. Now, the same is true by chametz. If someone takes a loan out from a goy, and then he uses as collateral his chametz, the Jew's chametz is collateral for the goy. Pesach shows up. Now, technically, if the goy owns the chametz, then it's not chametz shavar alav ha-pesach. On the other hand, if the Jew owns the chametz, then it is chametz shavar alav ha-pesach. So this is one of the cases where chametz is mafkia midei shibud. If the chametz is still in the possession of the Jew, he didn't put it into that goy's house, then the chametz is considered to be the Jew's chametz, and it's mafkia the shibud of the goy, and it makes it chametz shavar alav ha-pesach. The same is true by shichrur, which is our case here in the Mishnah. When the master frees the eved, in this case, he is mafkia midei shibud. He takes away the shibud over here. Now, as Tosafot points out, this might relate to a machloket abayi and rova, in the Gemara Psachim, as to when a creditor gets ownership over collateral. Is it mikano laba? Is it only when there's a default on the loan that the collateral then shifts ownership to the creditor? Or is it the mafreya, that retroactively he has ownership from day one that he took the collateral, obviously if there's no payment, if the defaults, that might have influence over here. Tosafot discusses that. Tosafot also discusses the issue that you raised, which is there are two other items that do this. Not only is it Hekdesh, Chametz, and Shechrur that do this, but also Avodah Zarah and Konamot have the ability to mafkia Dei Shibud. Avodah Zarah is if you make worship something, make it into Avodah Zarah, it's also mafkia Dei Shibud because it becomes Asur Be'anah. Konamot, we learned in Masech and Nedarim and Esu and Ketubot, that someone takes a Neder Konamot is also mafkia Dei Shibud. Tosfot here, as well as in the Gemara and Ketubot, ask the question that you're asking, which is that, why doesn't every debtor who has collateral outstanding with his creditors take a konam against the creditor? When he takes a konam against the creditor, makes it a surbana, he ruins the shibud, and now the guy can't collect from this collateral. So there's a simple way for every debtor to get out of any of their obligations. Tosafot says, based on the Gemara over there, we spoke about the ability to strengthen the husband's shibud on his wife and the wife's shibud on her husband. Over there, the Gemara talks about konamot, that would wipe out the husband's rights in his wife or the wife's rights in her husband. But the Gemara says there that the Chazal were alim the shibudei. They strengthened his shibud so that konamot won't work in that case. And so what Tosafot does is it says that that statement of Chazal was not just about a husband-wife relationship. It's about any debtor-creditor relationship, which is any time that someone wants to try to be mafkia, the rights of another party, they strengthened the shibud over there and say that the konam will not work. So why do they do the same thing with Hekdesh? So Tosafot differentiates. He says that if someone is makti something, or he makes it out to Avodah Zarah, it becomes a sur to everyone. Not only does it become a sur to the creditor, becomes a sur to the debtor or to any other party. Basically, this object's out of circulation now. So the debtor gets no benefit in that, meaning that he might prevent the creditor from collecting it, but he can't use it now. In Konamot, he would have done something that prevents the creditor from taking it, but everybody else, or he himself, could get benefit from it. That's where the Chachamim put in a blocking mechanism that Alim Shibudei, they strengthen the Shibud so the Konamot can't do that. And so to your question, yes, you could be Makdish something and ruin someone's ownership over there, but to what benefit? It all goes to Hekdesh now. Nobody, the debtor is not going to benefit from that. He's better off having the creditor take it and then pay back the loan than making Hekdesh. Now he hasn't paid the loan and the object just disappears. He has no rights in it anymore. All right, so that's the reasoning according to Rav, that we're speaking about here, our Mishnah, about his first master, freed him. Slave has no obligation to the second master because once he's freed, the lien of the second individual, the creditor over here, is gone. Ela mipnei tikkun olam. What is the tikkun olam here? Shemim tzenu bashuk. V'yomer lo avdi ata. That the second owner over here, the creditor, will find him in the shuk and say, you're my slave. Kofinet rabo sheni boso to ben chorin. We compel the second master or the creditor here to free him. And the Eved writes a document saying, I owe you the money for my value. Basically, the exchange. For you giving me this get shichur, which I really don't need, then I'll give you an IOU that I'll pay you my value. Eved doesn't have to write it here, but rather the Mishachrer writes it over here. Who caused the loss of money over here? It wasn't the Eved. It was his master, the first master, the debtor that caused the loss over here. So why should you obligate the Eved to make the IOU? The IOU should come from the debtor. He's the one who caused the loss. And that's the Tikkun Olam over here. But Micah Miflege, what is the Machoket here? But Mazik Shibudo Shel Chevero Mipalge. They argue here about if you damage your friend's lien. If somehow you remove your friend's lien, are you obligated over here? The Mar Savar Chayav, Umar Savar Pator. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel believes you are chayav to repay that. The Rabbo Arishon is compelled here because he ruined the shibud of his friend. Therefore, he's obligated. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that he's patur because the hezek was only in a lien. It wasn't a hezek directly. It's not direct nezek. And therefore, the only way to get his Rabbo Sheni to be quote-unquote whole is to have the Eved write something over here that should give money back to this Rabbo Sheni so that he's made whole. Idmar Nami, we have a similar view of this. A mazik shibudo shel chavero. Someone who damages the shibud of his friend, banu l'machloket Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Rabbanan. That is the machloket Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Rabbanan. So you see here, we have a memra that seemingly indicates what we're concluding is that the machloket here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is about whether a person who damages the shibud is obligated. Ula amar mi shichrero rabo sheni. Who freed him over here? It was not the first owner, but rather the second owner. Shuret adin ena David chayav klum b'mitzvot. In this case, the Eved is not chayav to keep mitzvot, except for the fact of tikkun olam. Sharei Yatzalav Shen Bo Mechorim. Because he now gets a name as being a free person. Because somebody had an Eved Get Shechurah, someone who has certain rights in him, the second master who has a lien on him and has rights here, granted him a Get Shechurah, and made him, in effect, into what looks like a Ben Chorim. And once he gets a Shem Ben Chorim, we don't want to enslave him again. And therefore, Kofinet Rabo Rishon, Vasoto Ben Chorim. Then we compel his original owner to free him, even though the original owner, technically the debtor over here, really does still own him. The Koteiv Shtar Al Damav. Now here, the Chachamim's position makes more sense, which is then the Eved has to write an IOU for his value. Because technically, the Eved was not freed by the debtor, only by the creditor, who didn't have real full rights to free him. But when he got a Shem Ben Chorim, we say, compel now the debtor to free him. But in that case, it makes sense that he should have to pay the money. But because of that partial ownership over here, as directed collateral, when he frees him, the Eved gets a Shem Ben Chorim. And for the benefit of Tikkun Olam, we say, once someone's had a Ben Chorim, we don't want them enslaved again. And therefore, we force or compel a get from the first master. Now, what makes sense here is that the Chachamim say you should pay. According to the first way we interpret it, Rav Shimon Gamliel's position made more sense with regards to when the first master freed him and caused the loss to the second individual, the creditor, makes sense that the debtor should be the one who owes the money, not the Eved. Over here, it makes more sense that the Eved should owe the money, that the Eved doesn't obligate himself, but rather the Shachrer, because he's the one who caused all of this problem to happen. The truth is that there was no obligation to free him, and therefore the Eved gains from that mistake, or what he shouldn't have done, that Rabo Sheni, and therefore he should have to pay for himself. Here, the Chachamim's position seems to make more sense. But my Kamiflegate, what are they arguing about? Bechezek Sheinu Nikar, Kamiflegate. When there's Hezek that is not visible, Marsavar Shmei Hezek, and therefore the creditor is obligated over here to pay, he called Nezek over here. It wasn't physical Nezek, but he called intangible Nezek, which is, by him writing this Get Shechur, he compelled now the owner to free the slave. And that is Hezek Sheinu Ikar. Marsavar Lo Shmei Hezek. And therefore the obligation is not on the creditor, but rather on the Eved himself to pay for his value. Ula Mai Taima Lo Amar K'Rav. Why did Ula not explain our Mishnah like Rav? Amar Lecha Sheini Rabo Karitle. He says, wait a minute. You're going to call the second one his master? Our Mishnah says that Kofinet Rabo. You compel his master. Who's the master over here? It's clear that the debtor is the master over here. So according to Rav, when you say Kofinet Rabo, that refers to Rabo Sheini, to the creditor. So that's why Ula doesn't like Rav's explanation, because Rabo Sheini is the one that you have to be Kofet. On the other hand, for Rav, my time alone, Mark Ula, he says, Amar Lacha Sheini Mishachrer Karidle. Rav doesn't like Ula's explanation, because then it says here, we compel the Mishachrer, the one who freed him. Creditor is called the one who frees him? Why is the creditor the one? He doesn't really have the rights over here. But either way, each one of them has a benefit in their explanation and a detriment in their explanation, because the Mishnah calls whoever it is a Rabo and a Mishachrer. Each one of them in their explanation has to say the one is referring to the first, the debtor, and one's referring to the second is the creditor. But given each explanation, there's a weakness based on the language of the Mishnah. According to Rav, the weakness is that you say you compel Rabo Asheni, his second master, to free him. How can you call the second guy his master, the creditor his master? For Ula, the weakness is that you're calling the second guy the Mishachwer, the one who freed him. How can you call the Rabo Asheni, the creditor, the one who frees him, if he doesn't really have rights to free him? So because of that, each one has a weakness, and therefore they chose their view over here as what the story is in the Mishnah, whether it was the first master that freed him, the debtor, or the creditor that freed him. And the implications of that, we just went through their two explanations of this machloket. Okay, we're going to stop here, but halfway down the daf, I'm in Aleph, I'm in Aleph.